following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, as we begin our trek to 500 episodes of the Parting Shots Podcast. This is episode number 401. I don't want to be doing this throughout the run to the 500, but I felt, we just did our 400th last week, so we might as well celebrate a little bit more with 401. But we'll have a great show for you. Last Wednesday, the Union men's hockey team opened practice for the 2024-25 season, the final season of college hockey at Messer Rink, and barring any unforeseen circumstances, the final first practice of Messer Rink for the Union Garnet Chargers. Had a chance to get over there last Wednesday to talk with several members of the team, head coach Josh Halgie, senior defenseman Cullen Ferguson, junior defenseman John Prokop, and senior forward Caden Viegas. They'll talk about what it's like to get ready for the season, how excited it is to play the final year, and some thoughts on the passing of the Gaudreau brothers a few weeks ago. Adam Schindler of the Gazette, my colleague, will join me for his weekly look at the area college football scene. Tough losses for both Union and UAlbany last weekend. Both teams look to bounce back this weekend, so Adam will talk about that. And then we're going to talk Syracuse football, off to a 2-0 start and an impressive win over a ranked Georgia Tech team last Saturday. Brian Higgins, a 2000 Shaker High School graduate. He's a host of the 315 on the ESPN radio affiliate in Syracuse. He joins me to talk about the Orange and what if there's a different attitude now with the football team, of course, with the new head coach as well. So coming up, we're going to talk some Union College hockey and get ready for the season. It's a little couple weeks away. Can't believe it. That's unbelievable. So let's talk Union College hockey next here on the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is ECAC Hockey Commissioner and Union Hockey alum Doug Christensen. You're listening to the Parting Shots
podcast. Time to talk some Union College hockey. We're getting close to the start of the season. The Garnet Chargers will open play October 5th, an exhibition game against Providence. That is the return of Nate Lehman, the former Union head coach, and has not been back since he left to go to Providence after the 2010-11 season. Of course, also Joel Beal, former Union player and assistant coach, will be back with Lehman. So that should be a fun day on October the 5th at Mesa, 1 o'clock start. And then the regular season opens the next day, October 6th. Union will host Army West Point at 4 o'clock. Of course, this is the final season of hockey at Mesa Rink, and barring any unforeseen circumstances, last Wednesday was the first final practice of the season for Union at Mesa. A lot of excitement for this season, not only because it's the final year of Mesa, but Union seems to have a pretty good team. It could challenge maybe for a top four spot in ECAC hockey. I had a chance to go over last week to talk to some of the players and head coach Josh Halgie and to talk about what the excitement level is like, obviously getting ready for the final season of hockey at Mesa. Also asked about the tragic passing of the Gaudreau brothers. Here first, we're going to talk with Josh Halgie, the head coach. And, of course, remember, a couple weeks from now, we'll have the regular spot with Josh with the his coaches segment here on the Parting Shots podcast. We'll tape that mostly, I believe, every Wednesday. But, of course, we like you to participate with questions for Josh. And I think the segment went well last year, and I'm looking forward to year two of the segment. Josh Halgie being his third season as the head coach of the Garnet Chargers. So here's what Josh Halgie had to say last week.
Well, Josh, there's always excitement for a start of the season, but with this year being the final year of Messer Rink, and today's the last first opening practice here at the rink, is this holding a special meaning going into the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, you want to make sure you do this place right and you honor and pay respect to it, because it's been such a great venue for college hockey, and you know, a lot of cool games have happened here, and just hearing, you know, all the former players kind of talk about their favorite memories has been pretty fun this offseason.
What does it mean for this final season? I mean, does that make this season, getting ready for the season, even more intense? You want to, you know, do well and, you know, leave this good impression this season?
Well, I think it's been something that we've been talking about all offseason, and the fact that, like, what this arena has meant to the people that have come before us, and how we want to make sure we, you know, play the right way. But I think there's big expectations for us just to try to take a step as a program and as a group.
Yeah, it's your third year as a head coach. What have you learned in your first 2 years, and how excited and confident are you heading into year three?
Well, it's been a growing process for, like, this group and myself, and now we're all a little bit, you know, more mature, and you know kind of know how the league's going to run as a head coach, and they know how we're going to operate as a staff. So I think, you know, those freshmen that played a lot 2 years ago are now juniors, and we're expecting a big step from them. You know, guys like Cullen Ferguson and Josh Nixon and Caden Viegas that are seniors, like, we're looking for. So it's kind of exciting. We're not a young hockey team anymore. We got some experience, and we're ready to go.
One of those juniors, and John Prokaw, he had a great year. I mean, the expectations for him could even be higher this year?
I think that John had a great offseason. He looks strong. He looks physically ready to go. We always have big expectations for John, and that's not going to change.
What do you see in this team and the growth of this team compared to a year ago?
Well, I think that there's just a lot more maturity from again those younger players, and I think they all kind of saw what it took to win in the playoffs last year, and you know, for us, we got to take that next step here and keep advancing. But it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of work early. You can't be trying to make up for it at the end of the season.
What are your goals heading into these practices leading up to the exhibition game against Providence, and then the regular season game the next day against Army West Point?
Yeah, I think early on here, it's going to be all about effort and our habits and details, just making sure we're doing things the right way. You know, keep building on the way we've been playing, and you know, as you get, you know, moving forward, we'll go into making sure we're handling the puck well and passing well, and then from there add in some structure. So early on, it's just going to be all about our compete and our detail.
Have you decided on captains yet?
We haven't yet. Obviously, like, we expect some guys, you know, to be a part of that leadership group, and guys like, you know, obviously you mentioned John, but Cullen Ferguson has done a great job leading. Caden Viegas, Josh Nixon, Nick Young are all guys that, like, come to mind for me that are going to be in that leadership group.
Unfortunately, the hockey world was hit with tragedy a few days ago with the passing of the Goudreau brothers. Yeah, especially Johnny Goudreau. I mean, what was he like to watch as a college hockey player?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one for everybody. It just hits so close to home, and the fact that he's a college hockey player, that was everybody was drawn to, and just how special he was. And then, you know, it's tough, and it just everything surrounding it is terrible. You know, just myself thinking about, you know, I have an 8 and 10 year old son, and what that would do to your family. It's heartbreaking.
What was he like to watch? I mean, how good was he? Yeah,
I mean, he was Johnny Hockey for a reason. I mean, it was pretty special. Just the way he would take over a game and how talented he was, and just how fun he was for everybody to watch.
Up now is senior defenseman Cullen Ferguson, who had an outstanding junior campaign. He had a career high in points with 3 goals and 15 assists. He's expected to be one of the leaders on this 2024-25 Garner Charger team. Could wear a C or an A. C for the captain, A for the alternate captain. So, of course, Cullen usually has some good things to say, and he did last Wednesday when I spoke with him. So here's my conversation with senior defenseman Cullen Ferguson.
Cullen, normally, obviously, first practice of the season, you're always excited, but is this first practice today? It's the last first practice in this building. What is the excitement like, the level like going into this season, knowing that this is, I mean, not only for you, your final season, but the final season of this rink?
Yeah, I mean, I've been chomping at the bit here for the last couple of weeks to get started, and I've been counting down the days. I can't wait to get after it. as for the Mesa, you know, this is my home, so I'm happy to be back here, and yeah, I can't wait to get started.
What does this place mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have actually asked me about going, about the new rink and not being able to go because this is my senior year, and if I'm being completely honest, I don't really care because, like, Mesa is my home, and this is the only place I'd want to play for Union, and I feel like any other place would just feel weird, so, I mean, I'm embracing the fact that, like, this is my last year at the Mesa, and this is Mesa's last year.
What is it like to play in this building?
I mean, the Mesa faithful bring it every night, and I absolutely love it. It's a loud rink because we have, like, the dome atmosphere. Yeah, there's nothing better than Friday and Saturday nights at Mesa rink, so I just can't wait to get back.
What's the excitement level of this team going into the season? I mean, you know, you got to the quarterfinals last year. I mean, expectations have to be high.
Yeah, I mean, we're excited about the group we got coming back and the new young guns we're bringing in. So I think there's a ton of excitement around our group, and you know, we're really looking to get after it here in the next couple of weeks and get started. And we just want to play some games. So, yeah.
What do you think the key is going to be for this season to, you know, get over that hump and get to Lake Placid?
I just think the biggest thing is going to be buying in the D zone. You know, ECAC is a defensive conference, and we have a lot of skill, I think. It's just going to come down to guys buying into the defensive zone. And that comes down to things like blocking shots and being in the right position at all times, having a good stick. So, yeah.
Well, hockey world was hit by a tragedy a few weeks ago with the passing of the Gaudreau brothers. How did that hit you? Did you ever watch Johnny play when he was in college?
Yeah, I mean, I was devastated, honestly. When I was first told about it, I didn't even believe it. Honestly, still, I don't really think I've come to terms with it because it just seems so sudden. But, yeah, I mean, it's devastating, and your heart goes out to the Gaudreau family. And, I mean, I wish them all the best moving forward, and my condolences, of course. So,
what was it like watching him play at Boston College and in the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's... I've watched a lot of, like, Union clips, like, from back in, like, the 2010s, and watching Johnny Gaudreau tear it up when they played Union, and that's why it just feels so surreal to know that he's gone now. So, yeah, he was an unbelievable player, and I think he was an unbelievable person, too. And I've heard many good things about him and his brother, so I think it was just two good hockey players, but two better people that hockey world lost.
Now ready to speak is Union junior defenseman John Prokop. A lot of eyes will be on John this season. He could be not only one of the top defensemen in the ECAC hockey, but one of the top players in the conference, and maybe, just maybe, have a chance to be in consideration for the Hobey Baker Award as a top player in college hockey. John led the team in scoring for the second straight season. He had 35 points on 8 goals and 27 assists. He ranked in the top 10 in ECAC hockey in assists, tied for third. He was the first teamer in the ECAC hockey and an All-American East second team. I know probably a lot of NHL scouts in the buildings, not only at Mesa, but around the ECAC hockey, looking at potentially signing John after the season as a free agent. So he's been to a couple of the development camps over the last couple of years. So, like I said, he'll be a player to watch in ECAC hockey this year. Here's John Prokop.
John, there's always excitement for the start of a new season, but with this year being the final year of Mesa rink, is there even more excitement as you guys start the road to Lake Placid?
It is. It's been a special place for all of us playing here, and I know it's been a special place to the people that have played in the past, especially that 2014 team. So it means a little bit more, obviously, going into last season here. Even though we're excited about the new rink, it's more exciting, or just as exciting, to play the last year at Mesa rink. So.
What is it like playing in this rink?
It gets loud. Everybody loves it. You can tell every game day, and it's been a special place to play since my first game here. So,
what is the sense of this team going into the season? You guys got to the quarterfinals last year. Are you guys ready to take that next step to get to Lake Placid?
We are. We were a younger hockey team kind of the past 2 years, and obviously we have 11 juniors, and you know, we have seniors leading us too, and we got a good freshman class coming in, and our sophomores are right there with them too. So, I think we're more experienced coming into this year, and We have expectations to get that bye, to make Lake Placid and make the tournament. So
you had a great year last year, a lot of awards. What are your expectations for this season for yourself?
Just to keep playing the way I've been playing. I mean, I don't take into account the awards as much. It's making or helping this team make our expectations a reality. So,
unfortunately, the hockey world was hit by tragedy recently with the passing of the Gaudreau brothers. Did you ever watch Johnny play on TV when he was at Boston College? Or what
yeah,
did you think?
I never watched him at Boston College, but I've seen, you know, his highlight reels, and he's always been a fun player to watch, whether he's in Calgary playing for Team USA or in Columbus, and all his highlight reel goals are just spectacular. And to see him and his brother, you know, pass in a tragedy like that, it doesn't sit well with you. And I mean, there's really no words. It's unimaginable what happened to him, and it's just sad.
Finally, it's Union senior forward Caden Villegas, who got married over the summer. He got engaged last year, and now he's a married man. Getting ready for his senior season. Had an outstanding junior campaign, a career-high 30 points on 12 goals and 18 assists. He was second on the team in scoring and also second in goals. He scored the game-winning goal against Brown in the first round of the ECAC hockey tournament, and he had a two-goal game against Dartmouth in the quarterfinals. Caden Villegas, I think, could have another outstanding season and could be one of the leaders, another one of the players to maybe be a force with in the locker room. So here is my conversation with Caden Villegas.
Well, Caden, obviously it's always exciting to get the season going, but with this being the last year of Messerink, does this make it even more special and more exciting as you head into the season?
Yeah, obviously it's the last year here, and we want to make it special, make it the best one we can have. So just put in the work in the preseason here and get after it right away.
What has it been like playing in this building?
Oh, I love it. Like, I'm missing out on the new one, but the sound in here, it's something magical. So I'll always cherish it, and I'll miss it for sure.
The fans are so loud, it makes it, you know, tough for the opposition?
Oh, absolutely. The fans bring all the energy, and I'm going to miss being in front of them on the weekends for sure.
This season, when you guys, you know, last year got to the quarterfinals of the ECAC hockey tournament. Good majority of these guys are back for this season. Is Lake Placid, is that a realistic possibility going into the season?
Yeah, definitely our goal, but it doesn't stop there. We want to get to the tournament and go as far as we can. As Coach says, we want to win our last game, so that's the goal.
What is the mood like going into this season?
We know we're a bit of an older group now. We got a lot of our returners, a lot of our scoring coming back up front, and then our D-Corps is a lot older, so they got that experience, so we're super excited for what we have.
But the rest of the league, have you had a chance to look at the other teams yet or not?
Not worried about those guys, just us right now.
Yeah. It was tough for the hockey world recently with the passing of the Gaudreau brothers. Did you ever watch Johnny play when he was at Boston College or in the NHL?
Yeah, I never really got the chance to see him in college, but when he was in the NHL, obviously he's a smaller guy like me. I loved his game, loved watching him. He was such a joy to be around from what I'm hearing, and obviously it's a tragedy, and I'm just wishing the most or the best for his family and all the people that were affected by the loss of those two guys, so I'm sorry for that, for sure.
We're going to talk some pigskin, Union College football and UAlbany football with Adam Schindler next. We'll look back at last weekend's games and look ahead to this weekend's games. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
You guys just didn't want it bad enough. That should have been an easy win. What were you doing out there? You gotta hustle. You could have made that play if you'd been open.
On the car ride home after the game, when you think you're helping by telling me what I did wrong and what I need to work on, all I hear is that I'm not good enough, that I'm supposed to be perfect, that it's not okay to lose. On the car ride home, all I need to hear is how much you love me and enjoy watching me play. That my worth isn't determined by my performance. That even on my worst day, I am worthy. That you see me learning, growing, and doing my best. And that is enough.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette reporter Chad Arnold. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. Time to talk area college football with the Gazette's Adam Schindler. And Adam, not a great weekend for the area football teams and Union and UAlbany. Let's start with Union first. They opened the season last Friday at Utica and dropped a 41-26 decision to Utica. I mean, was that a kind of a shocking and tough debut for John Drock, the new head coach?
John Drock went into this game, having talked to him last week, knowing that Utica was going to be a tough game. I think they were confident. But I don't think they're utterly shocked. This was a good and experienced Utica team. And when you get turnovers in big plays are two things that can really hurt you, and Union got hit with both of those, and they really struggled at points to stop the run in this game.
Yeah, Union was actually up 12-7 at one point in this game, and then it just got away from them.
Yeah, they really struggled to get to the half. They're down 22-12, and then boom, first play of the second half. The Utica running back Matt Brantley goes 90 yards for a touchdown. He finishes with 185 yards on 20 carries. Union gives up 253 rushing yards, which is not something teams did to Union last year. But they're replacing a good amount in the front seven, and they kind of struggled a little bit as the game wore on, and they had a couple of costly turnovers that really hurt them.
Patch Flanagan getting a started quarterback went 13-34 for 206 yards, three touchdowns, but also threw two interceptions, and he ran for a team leading 71 yards. How would you assess his performance?
You know, uneven. Really struggled at the beginning of the game. Missed his first five or six passes. Found a groove in the later part of the first half, but then threw an interception that hurt him. Threw another interception in the second half. Did some good things with his legs. Like I said, he was able to move the chains a few times, which helped because this Union team really did not get either Michael Fiore or Jonathan Anderson going in the running game, and that's the thing you would have expected. But again, the thing that this Union team knew going into Utica is that Utica was big and physical up front, and that's exactly what gave Union trouble when these two teams met 2 years ago, and Utica won at Frank Bailey Field, which Utica's the only team since the 2017 opener that Union lost in non-conference. They've only lost two non-conference games since then. They're both to Utica in the last three seasons.
Yeah. What do you think, without speaking to head coach John Drock, what do you think they need to do to get better as they prepare for their home opener Saturday against SUNY Maritime?
And they need to get off the field when they get opportunities. They really, really struggled to just slow down that Utica offense. And Utica does some unique things. They run a lot of actual two quarterback packages. They had a mobile quarterback that they could bring into the game. Utica had the ball for almost 37 minutes in this game, which is not an advantage which is very difficult for Union to give up. They gave up more than 500 yards of total offense, which is not something that happened to this Union team last year. They were able to do some good things, but I think the idea is we just need to tighten things up. They need to tackle. If you allow 253 rushing yards, you did not tackle very well.
Yeah, their quarterback, Brett Fuller, was 23 for 38 for 248 yards, so they didn't really stop him either.
Yeah, they struggled in a lot of aspects in this game. Defensively, you give up 41 points. That's pretty obvious. This was a team that did not. This was a team that even when the Union offense slowed down in the latter half of last season, the defense really carried them, and they're going to need that to happen. And this should be a chance Saturday, SUNY Maritime coming in, a chance to get right. And this is Utica was the toughest non-conference game on this schedule. Springfield will be a tough game in a couple of weeks, but even though they still have three of their next four, they still have three games on the road after their home this weekend. That was the toughest game and a good starting off point for them to hopefully get their groove under them as they get closer to Liberty League play.
What do we know about SUNY Maritime?
SUNY Maritime won their opener last week against Massachusetts Maritime. They won the Chowder Bowl,
ooh,
22-14.
So it's Red Chowder, the Manhattan Chowder.
Manhattan Clam Chowder unfortunately won this week. Yeah, if we want to have a Chowder podcast, then that, then I can.
I'm New England all the
way. Then I will fight the existence of Manhattan clam chowder.
I love not only doing clam chowder. I love putting Tabasco sauce in New England clam chowder.
I'm black pepper and I'm good. But yeah, SUNY Maritime was a 5-5 team last year. They struggled against a couple of common opponents. They were beaten pretty bad by Springfield last year, who Union handled pretty easily. So it's just this game is more about Union getting its groove under them. Saw some interesting things offensively from them when they did get things going. There was a little bit more jet sweep action and giving Patch Flanagan a chance to really make some decisions in the run game. But it will be interesting to see what this team starts to look like as they open at home. And if you start 0-2, then all of a sudden you get to be a little more nervous. But if they're 1-1 with Springfield, Montclair State coming up to round out the non-conference season, they can feel pretty good about where they're going to be entering Liberty League play.
Well, let's move over to you, Albany, and the Great Danes went to Morgantown, West Virginia to take on the Mountaineers in a game that nobody expected UAlbany to win. I love the headline on the press release that is on the UAlbany website. It says, number 16 football makes noise at FBS West Virginia, but it was a 49-14 West Virginia victory. So did the Great Danes make any noise?
Honestly, yes. This was a 35-point game because they couldn't slow down West Virginia's offense, which you'd be fairly unsurprised to. UAlbany was competitive in this game. They fell down 21-0 early, and they got back within 7 points in the first half. They had a chance to keep it at 7 going to halftime. West Virginia scores late in the half. They march right down the field off of a UAlbany touchdown in a 6-play 75-yard drive that covers 75 seconds. And then coming out in the second half, UAlbany drove right down the field, had a couple of big pass plays. They had first and goal from the 2 with a chance to make it with a 1-touchdown game, and they cannot punch it in from the 2. Mm. Three incomplete passes and a quarterback run that didn't go anywhere. Fourth down, they tried a fade pass, and receiver Seven McGee slipped coming out of his break. Never really had a chance to get the ball. And you'd say first and goal from the 2. Why aren't you running it? They were not running the ball at all. Pretty much through the entire game until the very final drive, could not get their running game going. The passing game wasn't efficient, but they were able to hit downfield quite a lot in this game. There were actually far more positive signs than you'd think from a 35-point loss.
I mean, what do they take from this? I mean, you mentioned the positives. I mean, how important is it to take the positives from a game that, as I said, they didn't expect to win that game, but what can they take from this?
What you can take from this is you're pretty sure you've got a real quarterback again. Coming off the LIU game, Miles Burkett did not have the best debut. And while he was under 50% completion percentage again for the second straight week, a lot of that came late, but 18 to 39, 306 yards and a touchdown. This deep ball looked really nice. He made a couple of really impressive throws that made you realize this is why this kid was a 4-star recruit who got picked up by a Big Ten school coming out of high school in Wisconsin. Made a couple of like back foot, backpedaling throws under pressure that were right on target. And they've got a lot of guys in this passing game. Seven McGee's looked very good through 2 weeks. 200-plus receiving. He's averaging 100-plus receiving yards a game. Levi Wentz, Marquise Dietz are experienced guys in this offense. And then Jakari Carter was a guy basically no one had really, wasn't even on the depth chart, made a really impressive play for a touchdown in this game. And yeah, they've really started to find, okay, we can have that similar vertical passing game that was really the key to that offensive success late last year.
Of course, now they go on the road again, this time to Idaho. And of course, rematch of last year's FCS quarterfinal game that UAlbany won. You think Idaho's got revenge on its mind?
I don't know if Idaho has revenge on its mind in the sense that there's a lot of difference. Last year's game was very much about 2-star young quarterbacks, neither of whom are still there. I would think the Idaho coaching staff, yes, will say, hey, we want this game. But also, this is an Idaho team that has serious national championship aspirations. They've played 2 FBS teams so far. They were very competitive against an Oregon team that has come into the year as considered maybe outside national championship contenders. Hasn't looked great in either of its games so far. But then they went out and beat Wyoming. And I am certain this is an Iowa team that's going to be top 10 nationally. in the FCS this week. They're really, really good. And if you follow the blueprint of the teams UAlbany has faced so far, you want to be physical and run the ball. UAlbany struggled a little bit to stop the run the first 2 weeks, so I would expect the Vandals inside the Kibbe Dome to be very aggressive running the football.
What does it say? What it mean? Back-to-back tough road trips. How important is it to maybe end up getting a split of this?
I mean, this would a win here is huge, because a win here and a good CAA season, this is a resume win that would absolutely put you in position for an at-large FCS playoff bid. Also, just gives a statement that, hey, we are finding that level that we did last year. They have a bye week coming off of this before CAA play opens next week against Maine. It's a confidence boost, and I think this team actually will be a little bit more confident coming off of an encouraging offensive performance against West Virginia. And if they can find the defense, which is really where this team needs to find its identity right now, they haven't had a great day on defense in either game yet. That would be where you'd really be encouraged, especially if they can find a pass rush, which is the thing that this team absolutely lived on last year. So far, haven't gotten to the quarterback as much. And you'd really want to see them, you know, now, especially playing teams on the FCS level, you want to see them start to find some guys who can replace the likes of Anton Junkaj and the late AJ Simon.
Well, I got to ask you, being a Syracuse grad, the Orange off to a 2-0 start, upset Georgia Tech this past Saturday. We're going to have Brian Higgins on from Syracuse ESPN Radio in Syracuse, the host of 315 after this segment. But is there genuine excitement about this team right now?
I think so. I mean, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, Kyle McCord comes in from Ohio State and has looked every bit the part of the kind of transfer quarterback that you want coming in. He has looked, after a couple of iffy passes early on in the opener against Ohio, he's looked absolutely spectacular, and it's a team that has really started to find its identity. There's issues. Special teams really hurt them against Georgia Tech. That game should not have been as close as it was, but they gave up a blocked field goal, a blocked punt, and they could not. And then they allowed Georgia Tech to recover an onside kick late in the game that got them back within 3 points. Offensively, it's as deep a Syracuse team as I've seen in a long, long time, and I've been following the program for, you know, close to 25 years now. Defensively, there's a lot of talent. Not having Marlo Wax, the linebacker, there right now due to injury is tough. He's the key in the middle of that defense. But there's optimism that if this is the kind of brand of football that they want to play, this is going to be a fun team to watch. You know, they're on a bye this week. They have Stanford coming in next week. And as an alumni and a fan, all you want to see is this team playing and winning meaningful games in the second half of the season. Because even when they've been good in recent years, they've really struggled to finish out years. It would be nice to see this team, you know, build as a season progresses, which they haven't done since 2018.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate a few minutes, Adam. We'll do this again next week, and we'll see how Union and UAlbany fare on Saturday.
Absolutely.
All right, that's Adam Schindler. As I said, come up, Brian Higgins from ESPN Radio in Syracuse. We'll talk about the Orange. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast. I'm sorry, the Parting Shots Podcast. Hey, pro football fans, it's time again to match wits with other pro football fans and win a prize by playing the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest. To play, go to dailygazetteprofootball.upickem.net and make your picks before the first game kicks off each week. If you have the most weekly points, you win a $100 Hannaford gift card. Play the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'em Football Contest today.
Hi, this is Union College head football coach John Drock. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with the Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Syracuse football team is off to a 2-0 start, and joining me to talk about the Orange start to the season is the host of the 315 on ESPN Radio Syracuse, and he is a 2000 Shaker High School graduate and one-time voice of the Tri-City Valley Cats. Please welcome to the program, Brian Higgins. Brian, appreciate a few minutes, and it's been a long time since we chatted, because I remember you when you broke into the broadcasting world back there with the Valley Cats.
Oh man, Ken, good to hear your voice. Yeah, it's been a minute since those first few seasons of the Tri-City Valley Cast. That was fun back in the day. Good to think back on those days.
Yeah, it was a great time. So let's talk about the football team. We were off to a 2-0 start. A big win last Saturday over a ranked Georgia Tech team that upset Florida State over in Dublin Island. I mean, how impressive is this team, and how impressive was that game on last Saturday?
I mean, the game was a lot of fun, Ken. This team's been fun to watch, and I think it's just been kind of like 10 months building here. Like, it all goes back to last season. Like, we've been watching the Dino Babers teams for 8 years. You know, they had some significantly high water marks, beating Clemson, winning 10 games, but it got stale at the end. Changes are made. You hire this guy, Fran Brown. Nobody knows who the heck this guy is. And then you start learning more and more about him, and the excitement grew. Recruiting hit. You get Kyle McCord, Ohio State's quarterback, out of the portal, and it just kept building. I mean, you know what it is out here, Ken? Usually we go to basketball season and forget football for a little while. We never forgot it. Like, it went 9 months, and the build to this has been so much fun. There's a buzz around town we haven't had here in a long time.
I'm looking at Fran's picture on the Syracuse website. The picture brings out, it looks intense in the picture. Is he that way with you guys, with the football team? And how important is it to bring that intensity to this football team?
Yeah, he's an interesting dude, because he's soft spoken most of the time, but it's like a quiet intensity. But he can get, like, when he gets latched on something, like he did thinking he was slighted by Georgia Tech's head coach last week, it kind of became a rallying cry for the whole week, which was kind of funny to see. So he's a soft spoken guy, but he's a very intense guy. And what we've seen so far is he's a guy that knows how to speak the language of today's player. They seem to gravitate to him.
Yeah, he was a member of the – he was assistant coach in the 2022 Georgia National Championship team. How much credibility did that instantly bring to this football team here at Syracuse?
I think a lot, because it's one where when you go into a hiring process like it, you know, Dino got fired after the second to last game of the season last year, and you start looking at, okay, who could be reasonable candidates? Where do you go? You go to, you know, sitting head coaches, former head coaches, our coordinators. So you look around, and Fran had not been any of those. So he was not a name that we were aware of. I had never heard of the guy before. Like, I don't know who this guy is. Then you start seeing his name pop up, and you're like, who is this guy? I don't know this guy. But then you see Georgia, you hear his Northeast ties, and I think what really sold it initially when he got here, like, the recruiting that happened immediately, and when I say immediately, I mean like the first weekend, some of the guys he had on campus is like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's doing some different stuff than we've seen around here in a long time.
You mentioned the quarterback, Kyle McCord, a transfer from Ohio State. How has he looked? And I mean, is this probably the most impressive passing game we've seen with the Orange in a while?
A while, if ever. I mean, depending on how far we're back here, we're going to go here. He's been, I mean, he's over 700 yards and 8 touchdowns through 2 games, and one of those is a ranked win at home against the league team in Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's not exactly a defense-forward team, but, I mean, he was Ohio State's quarterback, and he got run out of Columbus on a rail because he didn't beat Michigan, and he wasn't as good as C.J. Stroud. Like, his crime is he wasn't as good as the two guys that were first round NFL draft picks that came before him. Like, if that's your crime, so be it. He's a fantastic player. He's a good kid. I mean, we do a lot of stuff with him here at the station on a weekly basis. He's been great to work with. I think the only thing that stinks here about the transfer portal era and the Syracuse perspective is we only get him in town here for 1 year. But, you know, he can sling it. He's certainly the best passing quarterback Syracuse has had since at least Ryan Ness, which is more than a decade, and in a lot of ways a different style. You go back to McNabb when you're starting to make some of these comparisons about offensive success they're having.
I mean, do you sense that the fan base, which, you know, probably been, you know, disheartened with what's happened in this program for years, can you sense there in the community there in Syracuse, among, you know, the fans, that the students, that maybe there's something special going on? I know it's only 2 games, but there seems to be a different – this team seems to be different, seems to be a lot more confident with their play, and maybe that reflects what the coach is like.
Yeah, it's kind of twofold, because I'd say this off season, I had – you know, in March, in May, I had way more just random conversations with people about Syracuse football than I would have in those months, you know, like in any time in 20 years. And people are definitely very excited about it. I think people have really high hopes. You know, we do all these segments about what's the season going to be? What's the record going to be? And it's people like, well, why aren't they going to win the league and go to the college football playoff and all this stuff? That said, like, the other side of things is the Syracuse fan base is a little beaten down because, you know, over 20 years there have been a few landmark moments, but most of it's not been great. So while I think people are excited, the attendance has been, you know, okay through two games. It hasn't been fantastic. It's just kind of been all right. So I think it's twofold, Ken. Like, people are excited, people care, but at the same time, Syracuse fans have been through a lot, so they're a little reserved and putting their money where their mouth is right now.
Yeah, a little cautious. I mean, how much also does it help that their first four games are at home? I mean, they're off this weekend, and they host Stanford next Friday, and I'm still trying to get used to Stanford being in the ACC.
Yeah, noted ACC rivals, yeah. With Stanford will be here next Friday. But
ACC after dark.
Exactly. Like, Stanford's not any good. Like, if you lose that game, that's a problem. Next Friday, you got Holy Cross after that, which is your FCS game. So, realistically, Syracuse, you know, you picked up votes in the poll this week. You're up to what would be 29th. You're four spots out of the top 25. Not that you're going to get any big win, but you might watch a few teams lose. I mean, don't look down. You might accidentally find yourself ranked here undefeated going into October, which then, just the way the schedule works, there's no actual home games in October this year, not till November. But you got a chance here for some serious momentum to build in the next month or so.
Yeah, judging, looking at the schedule, they don't play Clemson. I'm just double-checking to make sure. But, I mean, just the way the schedule works for them, I mean, is it possible that they could find themselves in the ACC championship game if things break right?
Yes. Yes is the short answer. You know, we've broken down the schedule 8 million times, and now Florida State obviously doesn't look like Florida State. But, like, Syracuse, for all those years, they were in the same division with Clemson and Florida State. Every year you knew you had to play them both. So, like, every year you knew you didn't have a shot of making the conference title game. You had no chance. Like, because either Clemson or Florida State or both was a dominant team Syracuse's first 11 years in this league. You didn't have a shot of making the conference championship game. Well, now it's no divisions, different things. Go figure, you don't have FSU on the schedule this year, and they may stink. But you don't have Clemson, you don't have Florida State. What I look at the schedule as, there's a lot of coin toss games. Georgia Tech was one of them, and Syracuse ended up on the right side of it. I see like seven more coin toss games on the schedule, including basically every league game, because I don't think there's a game left where you're like, ooh. It would take moving heaven and earth to win the game, where in years past, like, to beat Clemson and to beat Florida State, and Syracuse has done that, it took like an all-timer, and then half your team got hurt and the rest of your season was ruined after the fact. You don't have that. Miami, I think everyone's thinking, at least today, Miami may be the best team in the league. That's the season finale. So if you get to that in good shape, great. But I think it sets up to have a chance. That said, I think there's probably six, seven other teams in the league that are having that same conversation, because this league is as wide open as it has been since Syracuse joined.
Yeah, as you mentioned, no home games in October. They go to UNLV on October 4th, a Friday night. They go to North Carolina State the following Saturday, October 12th, off on the 19th, and they play a Thursday night game at Pitt on October 24th. So if they win their, you know, go 4-0 heading into that stretch, 2-1, possibly? Was that a possibility with that schedule?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say anything's possible that stretch, Ken, because all three of those games I've put in the coin toss pile this year. Like, UNLV, they won 9 games last year, and you got to travel out west. Like, should you beat UNLV? Yeah, but it's a long road trip. You're in Vegas. Who the heck knows what might happen? NC State, before the start of the season, I looked at the schedule. I said, NC State's the hardest game of the schedule. Syracuse has never played well in Raleigh. NC State was bringing back a lot. Now, like, 2 weeks in, NC State, they got absolutely smoked by Tennessee the last week. They didn't look good against their FCS opponent in week 1. I'm like, okay, maybe that's more doable. at Pitt, I don't think Pitt's that good, but Syracuse hasn't won in Pittsburgh in 20 years. Wow. So it's one where, like, I feel they could win all those games, but I feel they could lose any of those games. And I think that's what's making this season so intriguing. Like, each of these games, I'm like, man, I actually, for a change, don't know what's going to happen.
We haven't talked about defense. What about Syracuse's defense? How do you see that?
It's a work in progress here. They lost their stud middle linebacker, Marlo Wax, to injury week one. He's out, it looks like, for at least half the season. They made some intriguing changes on defense last week with their SEC transfer, Texas A&M guy, Fadil Diggs, kind of played a hybrid role as a D-end middle linebacker and kind of freaked out Georgia Tech a little bit with something they haven't seen. It's a work in progress. Ohio ran all over them in week one. They shored that up in week two. Secondary's got some guys that have NFL futures. Fadil Diggs has an NFL future. I think they're intriguing. People are really high on the new defensive coordinator, Elijah Robinson. He also was hired away from Texas A&M, a Jersey guy like Fran Brown. So I think they're a group with potential, very young and inexperienced up front. So if it's a group that's going to have issues, it's going to be they just don't have enough size or experience at D-line. But I'll give it this. Game one, the defense was bad. Game two, they started off sketchy and really fixed it at halftime. So I've loved the improvements they've made so far.
Well, let me give you a chance to promote yourself here. When are you on ESPN Radio Syracuse? What are your hours and also all the social media?
Yeah, I mean, we're all over the place. Live 4 to 6 daily, ESPN Radio Syracuse. You can catch it streaming on our website at ESPNSyracuse.com. We also do, it is 2020. Forecast, so we're going to have pictures for everything. QSportsTalk.com is our Twitch platform where we stream all of our shows live and have a great chat and go back and forth on it. And you can catch me on all the social medias, Twitter and whatnot, at Brian Higgins SU. At QSportsTalk is all of our social medias where we put all the stuff out, and we have a good time with it. Pre-game shows, post-game shows for football. So it's a lot of fun when you're winning. So hopefully it keeps rolling here.
Appreciate you, Brian. Great catching up with you, and good luck with everything out there at Syracuse.
I can't appreciate it. Always good to talk.
All right, that's Brian Higgins. I'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the winners in the Daily Gazette's You Pick a Football and Auto Racing Contest. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette sports writer Mike McAdam. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The week one winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football contest was David McConville of Schenectady with a 16-0 record. David wins a $100 Hannaford gift card. Congratulations, David. The VIP winner was my colleague Adam Schinder. He went 15-1. Great start for Adam. The only game he lost was the New England-Cincinnati game because that was one of the games I lost. I went 13-3, so not too shabby of a start for me either. I'll announce the You Pick 'em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick 'em Football banner. The Week 27 winner in the Daily Gazette's Auto Racing Contest is Melody Carulla of Schenectady with 45 points. Melody wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Melody. The VIP winners were Dwayne Leach of All Season Equipment and Nick Platel of Grand Premier Tires with 10 points each. I'll announce the Auto Racing Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the Auto Racing Contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. I got my booster last week, and I'm ready to go. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Josh Halgie, Cullen Ferguson, John Prokop, Kaden Villegas, Adam Schinder, and Brian Higgins for coming on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shot podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.